You're listening to Future Tense, the AI show that demystifies the world of artificial intelligence and tells you what you need to know. Join Jeff Joyce and Julia McCoy live right now.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to Future Tense. It has been like a week since you've seen us, but so glad to be here. What a week, Julia, that we've had with all these releases in the news. It's been crazy.
Oh my goodness.
We're going to be covering things like Elon Musk sues OpenAI, Anthropic releases Claude 3. We have more information coming from something we covered in the past when it comes to faked AI images. And we also have a response from Sergey Brin, the co-founder of Google, about the Gemini AI images fiasco. Let's go ahead and kick it off with the very first topic, the Elon Musk sues OpenAI. Julia, if you want to kick that off.
Yes, yes. Well, if you haven't followed this saga, because that's really what it is, Elon Musk split up from OpenAI after being a key part of it when Microsoft bought into a nearly 40% stake. So he didn't believe in OpenAI being commercialized. He believed in it being for nonprofit and the good of humanity, because he saw that AI was our future and it would change the entire world. So Elon Musk is a visionary and he saw that. So whenever he separated from OpenAI years ago, there was a letter that was signed by him and several other notable figures where they kind of pleaded with OpenAI to, hey, make sure you're doing the right thing here. And they kind of put this call out there saying, this is something that's really scary if it falls in the hands of the wrong people. So they saw AGI, ASI, which is artificial general intelligence, artificial super intelligence. They saw all these things coming and it was just a matter of time. So what do we see in the news again? But Elon Musk actually sued OpenAI. And this just happened last week. We're talking March, the first week of March right now, 2024. So he just sued them. And I want to share something from the lawsuit that I thought was particularly interesting, where he quoted the CEO of Microsoft and brought up something in particular that was quite interesting. So let's see, if you are a visual listener, well, I guess we can say that, right? A visual listener, you're watching and you're listening. Then you're seeing on my screen that the browser cannot access my screen. I was just told.
Yeah. So you're not I was about to say.
Oh, that's the wrong one. So before we went live, I probably have never seen such a comedy of tech errors. Like the screenshot I had pulled up to share with you guys was suddenly incredibly blurry and you couldn't read it. Jeff tried to send it to me and I couldn't download it. So I had to airdrop what he sent to me from my phone. And here we are talking about, you know, AI potentially ruling the world. Technology is great until it's not. But if we look at the actual lawsuit, there's some pretty interesting things that Elon Musk brought up. Now, what's interesting to me is he didn't have to do this. This is really his time and money that, you know, some could say he's wasting. He didn't have to put this lawsuit together, but he did. And he sued OpenAI last week. So this is what he said in the lawsuit that was really interesting to me. He said that Microsoft's CEO boasted that it would not matter if OpenAI disappeared tomorrow. He explained that we have all the IP rights and all the capability. He said, we have the people, we have the compute, we have the data, we have everything. We are below them, above them, around them. If that doesn't creep you out, I don't know what would. It creeped me out for sure to read that. So then Elon Musk went on to say in this lawsuit, which you can Google it and read it for yourself. It's out there. He said, this case is filed to compel OpenAI to adhere to the founding agreement, which keep in mind, Elon Musk was a part of, and return to its mission to develop AGI, artificial general intelligence, for the benefit of humanity, not to personally benefit the individual defendants, the largest technology company in the world. So he's worried that AGI will fall into the wrong hands. And I've been deep in the rabbit hole exploring what AGI is and what our world will look like post AGI. AGI is expected to be out by 2026. Is it out now? There's theories, speculations. Jeff and I made some predictions couple episodes back. You should definitely listen to that and catch Jeff's awesome Lego head analogy, which is a great way to break it down in a way where you can understand it. But essentially, whenever the internet happened, the world had, for the first time, a nervous system where we could, much like in our body, everything communicated to itself through channels. So the entire world can get online. Some, of course, countries don't have those capabilities yet, but we're seeing that overcome more and more. The truth is the majority of the world is actually online as we speak. Billions and billions of people came online in the last year alone. So with the majority of the world online, now we're on the precipice of what could be a sentient thinking capability attached to that nervous system, which is like a brain coming online for the first time. And that is AGI. So if we have this autonomous brain that has all the knowledge of the world in it, because the internet's been around for a decade, that's why these large language models exist, then we have something so infinitely powerful that it's really important to figure out what the heck to do with it. And so since seeing this actually occur, there's been, I would say not, I want to say it's an answer, but it's also not, because I don't know if OpenAI just did this for the press, but they did respond with this. So if you are, I'm going to use that cool phrase again, visual listener. If you are a visual listener, you're seeing on screen this article on Fortune.com where OpenAI signed an open letter to build AI responsibly. And this came days after Elon Musk sued the company, again, for putting profit ahead of people, commercializing what should have been a nonprofit entity. So Sam Altman, who is the CEO of OpenAI, was in Switzerland last month, where he talked about this. He's very adamant, if you listen to him, he's very adamant about what seems like, you know, a safe approach. But again, like, how much of this is press? We got to be critical thinkers here and look at all angles. But they did sign this open letter. And in the letter, they talk about the impact of AI. And they compare it to things like the printing press, electricity, the internet. And the letter says the balance of its good and bad impacts on humans will be shaped through the actions and thoughtfulness we as humans exercise. And it's our collective responsibility to make choices that maximize AI's benefits and mitigate the risks for today and for future generations. And here's where there's a bit of a red flag for me. The letter didn't have any specific actions. That's where it stopped. So that, to me, just kind of sounds like press. I realized I wasn't sharing that at all. My screen didn't work again.
Dang it. Technical difficulties. It's been happening all day. Facebook was down earlier, you know. Technology it's today true. Is not working.
Yes, exactly. But this is the article I was sharing on Fortune.com where they were saying that the letter stopped after stating it's our responsibility to make choices that maximize AI's benefits and mitigate the risks. And that was it, right? So there wasn't anything else that said, hey, here's what we're going to do. Here's a very specific plan of action to make sure this is not commercialized, to make sure that the greed of a big corporation doesn't drive it, and to make sure that we're for the people. And it's interesting because when we saw Sam Altman so quickly ousted, and what was interesting is all the employees were ready to follow him. I feel like they didn't anticipate that. But then Satya goes and says something like that, where it doesn't matter if the employees go because we have the IP. And that just sounds like, you know, grew from Despicable Me. Sounds a little sketch to me. I'll hand it over to you, Jeff. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I have quite a few thoughts on this. So the comparison of comparing AGI to the printing press is like comparing like a kindergarten kid running in the like for track and like a professional athlete that's, you know, running like a super fast mile. Like the comparison's so large. Like, it's gonna disrupt every single industry. Printing press is only disrupting one. We're talking about everybody. A worldwide disruption. That's how big the technology is. And one thing is it's very easy to just think about like, oh, Elon Musk is just suing this for OpenAI for optics, or that he's suing them because of the nonprofit. And the reality is that we have no definitions on AGI, really, like no standardization across the board definition of AGI. And if we look at the lawsuit, it's up to OpenAI's discretion to determine whether or not they have AGI. That was part of their agreement. Yes. They're working with Microsoft that they would say we have achieved AGI, and then Microsoft would no longer have access to their models beyond that point. So it is interesting. Well, it's in OpenAI's benefit to say they don't have AGI, but the thing about this lawsuit, it's going to uncover a lot of stuff. And this is all about optics in the form of OpenAI trying to not be as transparent as they need to be. Mm-hmm. And another thing about this trial is that it's a jury trial, and it will most likely be televised, and it will most likely be streamed on the internet. So we're going to get to see all of this take place, and there's going to be drama. You can bet there'll be a ton of drama coming out from Elon Musk and from OpenAI and Sam Altman, and going into what exactly happened when Sam Altman was fired, what caused that, and whether or not they have AGI. And we could see a standardization come from this where we actually have a true definition of AGI, and we can classify things around that actually protect individuals. So if you're somebody that's like, I'm very, very concerned about the future of the entire population, the world, because of AGI and the implications of it, this is something for you to watch, because you'll be able to have a standardized definition of what it is, if we're there yet, and be informed to make decisions when it comes to talking to your local representatives on voting, on even just having general knowledge about this technology. It's going to be very important that you pay attention and look into this stuff. So if I go to one of the articles that we have here, this is an opinion piece from The Verge, and I think it's pretty funny. Let me go ahead and share my screen.
You never know what you get with The Verge. Oh, and look, my camera just went out.
Technology, am I right?
Oh my goodness.
We're in the age of AI, folks, all right?
Really, so advanced here.
It says, Elon Musk's legal case against OpenAI is hilariously bad. The richest man in the world has an increasingly abstract idea of what contracts are. Now, the reason why that they're saying this is because they believe, from their opinion, that in the contract, OpenAI is right. That's basically what they're saying. But I don't think that Elon Musk necessarily cares at all. I don't think that this is something that is done so that way he has a grudge against OpenAI or something like that. I think it's purely business.
I agree.
I think this is one of those things where he's trying to get info on his competitor. He's trying to ruin reputation of OpenAI and Sam Altman, and it's in his best interest to do so. And I think that it's a masterclass from Elon Musk when it comes to things like causing chaos. He's very, very good at causing disruption and chaos and confusing people on what his true intentions are. If you were paying attention to the whole Twitter fiasco at all and his acquisition of Twitter, that was so chaotic. People were saying, oh, he wants Twitter. No, he's trying to back out of Twitter. No, he wants Twitter again. Well, why does he want Twitter? What is their intentions with Twitter? It was a mess across the board. And we're going to see this again. And I can bet everything that there's going to be a ton of chaos leading up to rumors and allegations coming out from even just the stuff that we saw inside of the lawsuit. And I don't want to get too deep into it because it is a long paper, long legal document, but there is a lot there. If you're a YouTube listener, we'll try to include a link to that lawsuit in the description. So make sure you look out for that. But yeah, that's pretty much my take on it. I think that this is completely strategic. I think it's all for business. OpenAI has a lot to lose, and Elon Musk has almost nothing to lose from this lawsuit.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's something we were talking about a couple episodes back as well. It's something I'll be talking about on videos I release coming up even more, because I think this is so important when you're reading articles, like whether it's The Verge, The Guardian, Business Insider, Entrepreneur, you name the publication, you really got to be careful, because these articles can get so biased because the authors have so many preconceived notions about what they think AI is or AGI is. And it's not always like the actual living reality of what is coming or the situation at hand. So I think that's a really good thing where you, you know, Jeff, you pull up the Verge article, but it's like, well, is this really what Elon Musk, is this why he's suing it? Because he has, like, he has nothing to gain. He's losing time, money. Why on earth would he do this when he could go build, like, another solar company that powers half the world? You know, whatever. That's Elon Musk. But he's doing this. So why is he doing it? I think it's really interesting to see that, you know, he might actually care a lot about what actually happens to the world post AGI. I really do think he cares. You know, I was listening to him speak at the Bosch conference, which was last week, and he was saying, like, this is going to be, he actually, I was surprised, he used the words AI apocalypse. And then somebody asked him, are you sure you want to live in these times, Elon, if you're calling it an AI apocalypse? And you know what he said? He's like, it's a lot more fun to see it happen than to miss it all.
I mean, yeah, I'm on board with that too.
I was like, okay, yeah, yeah, same. Disagree. Just trying to pivot, you know, and get ahead. That's what we're teaching our business owners, marketers, and entrepreneurs that listen to do's. How do you pivot? How do you work with it? How do you get ahead? But I think it's interesting to see the CEO of Microsoft say something publicly in press that is 100%, sounds 100% sketch and questionable and suspicious and potentially putting your entire staff down. Like, we don't need you. We have the IP here. Like, that is suspicious to me. So I think it'll be really interesting to see Elon Musk and him in particular, Satya Nadella, go at it and see what those conversations look like. If they do end up going at it together versus, like, you know, I expect they would, right? Would they sit down or would they let their lawyers duke it out?
I imagine this would be a lot of lawyers. I think that this is a high profile case. And if it doesn't get thrown out, like, there's still a possibility that that could happen. Like, but I mean, hopefully not. I think this is going to be really, really interesting. This is the equivalent of the, like, AI robot boxing match that I wanted to see happen. It's just the legal side of it and two AI juggernauts going at it. It's going to be really entertaining and really informative. And it's going to really, I think, dissuade a lot of the people that are concerned about AI. I think that the whole AI apocalypse notion, I see it, I understand it, and mm-hmm. it is a concern. But I don't really see it being, like, that much of a concern. I think that enough people and there's enough conversation around, like, AI ethics and safety to where I can't see it happening.
Yes. I don't think it's as bad, 100%. I truly don't think it's as bad as what the media has portrayed, what Hollywood has portrayed for years. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I'm releasing a YouTube video tonight, actually, called "The Media Has Been Completely Lying to You." So that's the title of my video releasing tonight, because after studying this really in depth, just hours and hours by now of listening to computer scientists, MIT researchers, physicists, entrepreneurs that are all invested in the future of what's going to happen with nanotechnology. I mean, fusion, you name it, all the way to AI, because we have to have things that power AI. We can't just have AI. So what's going to happen with quantum computing? What's going to happen with energy? Are we going to get the nuclear fusion, which is 10 times more powerful than the sun? You know, we've been on the brink of that every few decades, but it hasn't happened yet. So all these conversations are really interesting to follow. And I think there is a best case scenario where, you know, we're definitely going to see economies and things that we know collapse. But if you ask yourself and you look back at history, for example, has the dollar always been around? It hasn't. There was a time where we lived in the world where, you know, we were eating out of a garden and money was not the driving factor. So what would a world look like where AI is doing all the human labor? Humans are no longer needed because AI is just infinitely cheaper, faster, and better. So what will humans do? And I think, like, yeah, there will be a collapse of some type, but I don't think it will be anything like what the media portrays or what you see in films like The Terminator. Elysium, one of my favorite movies. I don't think that portrays reality. So I think it's interesting to study all of that and to see the new taxes that come up and how companies and corporations shape this future in a world where they don't need the human. What if the world wasn't driven by money. That is so interesting to explore because, you know, one of the reasons, I'll just bring up an example. I mean, I love what I do. I've never been more obsessed with anything in my life. Where I'm at right now is just, I feel like it's a sweet spot for me. But, you know, a driving factor always is you got to pay the bills. You got to pay the bills. And that's why sometimes you sit and you work late or you take on extra gigs or you, you know, give up things. But if, what if you were giving up things because you loved it? What if that was the driving factor? How much happier would humanity be? So, I mean, these are the things, and I'm getting off into the weeds here. You guys have got to tell us in the comments if you appreciate the weeds. Let us know if you like the rabbit trails. But I mean, I think it's important to think about these things apart from the media clickbait and really look at what the entrepreneurs are saying. Go follow these people that are building the tech and see what they're saying about all of this. And you're listening to our podcast, right? We're going to bring it to you. So that's just something I would really echo from what Jeff said, where he pulled up the article, but he didn't agree with it. You know, like, we got to be critical thinkers here and think about a world where the future is more in line with what could happen than what has been portrayed to us. So that said, Jeff, should I move it into the next headline, which is yours, I believe?
Is it the Anthropic one?
Yes.
Yeah, we can go down Anthropic. I'm pretty excited to talk about that. We actually got a comment from somebody. Hello, guys. Love your level of excitement you two have. Hey, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Ross.
Love doing this podcast and especially doing it live. So seeing people come in and actually give us feedback is great. Yes. Yeah, let's go ahead and get right into Anthropic. Now, I will preface this by saying that I have not had the chance to play with this yet. I am planning to do that later this week, but it looks pretty interesting. And for everything that I've seen, it seems like it's pretty good. So introducing the next generation of Claude. This is Claude 3. If you haven't played with any of Anthropic's models, the way I would describe Anthropic's models is that it's really good at decently sounding output as opposed to ChatGPT. It's not as creative as ChatGPT, but I would kind of classify this in the same realm that I classify Gemini. So generalized AI model that is pretty decent when it comes to its reasoning. And this model just kind of amplifies that reasoning. And so we look at the level of intelligence that it has between the models. They released three different models with this. We have Claude 3 Haiku, Claude 3 Sonnet, and with Claude 3 Opus. So with Opus obviously being the strongest of the models. And obviously it costs the most. But you can try this for free on Claude's website. This kind of breaks down the stats and the comparisons between all of the models. So it goes from like undergraduate level knowledge and it being 86.8%. And then it goes down for the rest of the models, showing that Opus is the strongest model. And then they compare that against GPT-4. Now, are they doing that against GPT-4 Turbo? I don't know. It's not really saying. But it's just a five-shot comparison. It's giving GPT-4 a 86.4%, so narrowly beating it when it comes to undergraduate level of knowledge. Graduate level knowledge is showing it's beating all of them. Grade school math. So one of the trends that I see that happens with a lot of these LLMs when they come out is that they release a report like this and they have these numbers here, but what is that number? Those numbers actually translate to in real world output. Oftentimes it's more underwhelming than what we think it is. We all go through testing and we'll see like, oh, it doesn't really handle this type of text well. It doesn't handle, you know, math exactly the way that they described it. Maybe they just like you're using some type of specific prompting, and that leads further into the difference between these generalized models and specialized models. When it comes to the output, you have to be very specific and cater to that specific model in order to get the output that you want, where the specialized model is going to do that process for you and be specific to the general or the overall need that you are trying to get out of it. So that's just something to keep in mind. But everything that I've seen from this model seems to indicate that it is at least better than GPT-4, which leads me into my next exciting thing, which I'm super excited about. Every single time at Content at Scale that we're about to release something or do something, we have OpenAI seems to release a new update every single time we go to an event. Yep. They release a new update. So actually, next week we will be over in Contact Hacker Live, same time as South by Southwest. Ooh. Over in Texas. And my prediction is that we're going to see GPT 4.5 in the next week or coming weeks.
Is that fully based on the fact that we are releasing something?
Yes, it's fully based, and the fact that Claude 3 just released. So that's like everything's teeing up for like that perfect, you know. They're just going to be like, hey, it's a perfect time. We have a sixth sense about when Continent Scale is about to release something, so let's go ahead and drop some news.
And Jeff's not kidding here. Like, this is not just like, oh, one or two launches and then OpenAI just somehow crossed over on a 7-day. No, it was like the exact launch day, like three times last year. A big launch for us was also a giant launch for OpenAI when their custom GPT store came out. And they weren't really telling anyone what that looks like until they had that conference and they revealed it all. And it was like that exact the next day, RV3 launch. It was just so uncanny to see. And what I love seeing is how like our founders' judgment and product vision aligns with what huge companies like OpenAI are releasing. So to me, I'm like, oh man, right on track, right on track.
It gives us a good indication that we're doing really well and we're kind of ahead of the curve. And to give everybody some context, we released AI agents at the same time that they released the store. And that store provided the same functionality as our AI agents. Now, the thing about our agents that was different is that they were excellently crafted to give you a specific output. Whereas the store was more of, hey, let me go create a custom GPT and put in a simple prompt and still use that generalized model to have it give you an output. And Julia, you saw how horrible that experience was.
Oh my gosh. I did a keynote for a PR company. And like I was speaking to teams from Dell and other big companies, their marketing communications teams were there. And so halfway through my keynote, this was in December. So right after the custom GPT store had come out last year, in December, the entire second half of my keynote was just how terrible the custom GPT store is and how you cannot think that you can create some AI bot and it will execute your tasks or your level of work quality. And that was more important, like tasks. Yeah, sure. It can get tasks done, but like, do you want that content to convince your lead? No. Julia's word styler ain't going to do it.
Yeah. It was like Julia's wordsmith or something like that. Yeah. That's so funny.
Yes. So it's like, you kind of have to, I think you have to kind of be some kind of engineer to set up a custom GPT correctly. And even then, I don't know if it would work.
Yeah, you have to have a deep knowledge of prompt craft and use custom data to put in for the GPT to really like remotely work close to correctly. It's a process, which is not worth it.
Yeah, and even then, like you're still feeding if you're using a custom GPT and you're clicking on those prompts and you're prompting it with your own info. You got to remember, like none of that is secure. And that's a big concern for the enterprises I spoke to in that keynote. Like they can't use something where if they feed some proprietary input from Dell, that can't feed the internet at large and then show up in somebody else's prompt response because the LLM doesn't have parameters built around it, which is, you know, something that Continent Scale does have, by the way, is parameters. So everything you feed it and put in the project settings that is protected, continentscale.ai. Back to you, Jeff.
So there is an article that I kind of wanted to get into. It's an update. All right, do you want to go down that path?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So a prediction that we made is that we're going to see a lot of deep fakes. If you listen to like one of our very first episodes, we talked about how this election cycle, we're going to start to see a lot of deep fake stuff come out, images, videos, audio of different candidates and stuff like that. And I didn't think it would be this early. We're in March. It's March 5th right now. I thought it may be like closer to like June. We'd start to see the stuff pop up. Nope. It just shows you how quick AI works. You know,
Yeah.
So this article is Trump supporters target black voters with faked AI images. Now, I do want to preface this by saying something. This is not Trump's campaign doing this. This is individuals within his audience that are creating these images. So I don't want to put out misinformation. I want to make sure that you have the facts. So basically what is happening is that people are using these AI generated images to try to sway voters within the black population in order to get them to vote for Trump. Now, we're going to see this in droves. And I'm not talking about just on the Republican or Democratic side. It's going to be on both sides. We're going to see a ton of this usage. And as you can see, like, somebody is actually labeling these as false. It is a fake image. And you can, if you've looked at AI images, you can kind of tell that it looks fake. Like the over smoothing, like the, I mean, the hands are decent on these, but it looks unnatural. So it gives that like uncanny valley type of vibe where it's just like,
yeah,
it looks like it's a person, like, but it's almost soulless, right?
Yeah, agreed. It looks a little plastic.
Yeah. So we're going to see a lot of this stuff popping up. And I'm sure if I zoomed in here, we'd probably see messed up lettering and this and that. We're going to see a lot of that. Don't be surprised if we don't see ads on this. If we start seeing videos pop up with people, celebrities endorsing candidates, making messaging that, you know, you should vote, get out and vote, all this kind of stuff is going to pop up. And the closer we get to the actual election, the more we're going to see this type of stuff play out. And just be aware this exists. Always try to look online to verify photos, to verify facts. Find a few trusted sources of websites that you get your information from and kind of try to still, even those trusted sources, keep it through a lens of like, this might be fake. And this is going to be a really painful part of this AI transition that we're going through, where you're not going to know what to believe. You're not going to know what's fact and what's not. And you just have to be patient, let these things iron themselves out, let the technology catch up for AI detection to where we can actually combat this kind of stuff. But this will compound the fact that we need regulations, we need standardizations, we need an intelligent governing body in the Senate, in the House, everything like that, to make appropriate decisions and educated decisions on AI and AI safety.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I was listening to Joe Rogan interview, I believe it was Sam Altman, and I can't believe this idea came from Joe Rogan. I was sitting there with my mouth open. What did I just hear? What? So anyway, and it ties right into your point. He asked Sam Altman, what if the world's government becomes AI because AI is the only unbiased ruler? And Sam Altman went there. Oh, okay, Joe.
Yeah. So that actually leads right into the next topic. I'll go ahead and pull that up too, because that was perfect. You set that one up. So one thing that you said there was bias.
Yeah.
And the AI would be an unbiased ruler. But unfortunately, we know that that's not the case. Was it last week we were talking about Gemini? So Gemini have been trained on data in order to make it have a bias towards certain ethnicities. And recently, the co-founder of Google, Sergey Brin, said that he messed up. He said, in a video recorded at San Francisco AGI House, that is not AGI as in artificial general intelligence, it stands for something else. He can be heard saying, we definitely messed up on the image generation. I think it was mostly due to just not thorough testing. It definitely, for good reasons, upset a lot of people. And I think that's a bit of an understatement. If you thorough testing is like, oh, you know, we made this a certain way and we just didn't test it. But the thing is that they gave it the information in the first place and they understood what was in there. And this isn't the first time that Google's been in this position to where we've had biases when it even comes to search results that were popping up, favoring candidates, favoring certain groups of people. And Google has been known to have these biases. It's in with within their culture. So when you have these companies that are creating these technologies that have internal biases in their culture, we're going to see AI models that have biases built in within them that will make decisions. And so if you think about like a governing body of like a, you know, a state that's run by AI, that it won't have bias. Unfortunately, it probably would, and it'd probably sway in certain directions. So unless we have like an independent cohort, like actually developing an AI that was completely unbiased, we'd run into issues there too, because then we would have lack of empathy. It would, the reasonings that it has for even like jokes, we've talked about this in the past, like where can an AI actually understand a joke? It's like, no, it can emulate joking, but it's not like, it doesn't have a fundamental understanding of what is funny and the cultural significance of what makes something funny to every different group of people.
Yeah.
But yeah. This episode's very in the weeds.
Well, that was very well said. Do you think that AGI or ASI could change that bias that's kind of inherent in these models?
Yeah, I think that ASI can be designed in a way that where it's like, it looks internally for biases and then says, are these biases factual and important? So that's what's important. Because I think that everybody has bias. And if we want, I think we'd want ASI to kind of function as a human, but a very intelligent human. Obviously it'd be smarter than the average human, but we'd want it to look and check in on itself, on its own biases and its own conclusions to make sure that it's making the right decisions. So that way it still has that empathy, it still has an understanding, but it's not, you know, just following blindly with its own like confirmation bias, I should say.
Yeah, great stuff. Yeah, it's interesting that I think, you know, these podcast hosts that ask people like Sam Altman questions, they don't understand the models, but I still really like seeing the questions that they ask. Like, well, what if AI could do this? And I just never expected Joe Rogan to say, yeah, AI could replace every human government on Earth.
Right.
Okay.
Do you think AGI would like the carnivore diet?
Oh my goodness. So do we have any other headlines, or should we start wrapping up with our event and some news on Continent Scale? What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, let's go ahead and go there. I think we had one more, but we can add that to next week.
Cool. By the way, this list of, this will just go on next week's episode is, let me see. Oh, 13 pages long. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a ton of stuff that we haven't covered yet that we've been meaning to cover, but there's just so much AI news, and all of it feels so pressing and important when it happens right away, like the OpenAI stuff, the lawsuit. It's like, we have to cover that.
Exactly. Well, that's our goal too. You know, if you're listening to this, is to always think about not just breaking news, but is there a settlement here, or is there a future to think about? Is there something to look at? So, right, like we brought you the lawsuit, but not just, oh, the lawsuit happened, which is what you'll see in 1,000 articles. But we also brought you in this episode, like what to look for next, what OpenAI is doing, what the CEO of Microsoft said. And, you know, we pointed fingers at areas where the press came through more than the plan from Microsoft. So that's what you're going to get here. It's not just the headlines, but a lot of thought behind it. So that said, let's move into next week is Content Hacker Live. And I can't tell you, I'm getting just so excited. We have a couple hundred people signed up. We have over 100 that will be showing up in person. It was interesting because I feel like it was pulling teeth to get people to show up live. They're like, oh, I'll just catch the replay. But if you're going to be here and showing up live, like it's going to be insane. It's going to be magic. It's going to be amazing. We have some incredible people. I'm really thrilled about the speaker lineup that we have. I mean, it's just such a mix that is going to be so rich and so diverse. And I don't say that to be PC or whatever. I really mean that. you're going to get like diverse opinions and thoughts from people that have spent the last year working in AI full time and are on track, some of them, to make over $1 million this year from their AI services alone. So if you can make it, be here next week during South by Southwest. If you're on our email list at continentscale.ai, whether it's a lead magnet you've signed up for or even our software at Continent Scale, then you're in what I call the FOMO of all FOMO campaigns right now, where I've set up emails that have things like Jeff and I making a sad face while on 6th Street because that's how much we miss you. Jeff, I reused that selfie and that was what I did. that's going out tomorrow. And you're going to hear about the humanoids that we hired. Yes, that's all I'll say. You'll hear about that today if you're on our list. That email goes out today in the afternoon. So if you're on the continentscale.ai list, you're getting a special offer because I really want you guys to make this event if you can. It is going to be amazing. And I think being there in person, you're going to get so much because you're going to be around people that are literally in the future of this, thinking about the future every day. Jeff and myself, plus 15 other amazing humans that are practicing this on a daily basis. So contentagger.com/event, or if you're on our list at contentscale.ai, you're a Continent Scale customer, you've read the blog, signed up for the lead magnet, however you're on that list, you're going to get a special offer this week to jump on that event. The ticket price is insanely good and it gets you to the recordings as well, but I really recommend you be here if you can, because it's just going to be amazing. That's all I'll say, like amazing. So that's happening next week, which means the podcast will be off because we will be busy hosting panels or being on panels or playing the extrovert for 24 straight hours. And then dying with exhaustion after it. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually really, really excited. So we won't have the podcast going next week, and that is why. And then let's move into what's happening this March at Continent Scale. Some pretty big updates are launching. Jeff, I'd love to hand it over to you because you've been working on this quite a bit as our AI director.
Oh, yes. I do AI. so that's an inside joke. There. Yeah, we'll save that for another episode. But one thing I do want to say before I get into what I'm working on, if you're audio listeners, the URL for that is contenthacker.com/event. If you want to make sure that you attend or if you want to get more information, make sure you visit that link. So what I'm working on right now is something called deep research. And we haven't really talked about this publicly yet. I'm going to give a little tease here. But basically what we're doing is we're putting together the most in-depth blog post that any AI writer will be able to put out. And the way that we're achieving this is that we're taking all real-time data from all these different sources. I hear music for some reason.
Yeah, I'm trying to add some effects. Never mind. Drum roll.
Drum roll. I'm just kidding. That was a horrible drum roll too. So we're going through, we're taking all this information and it's live data. It's data that's like current, like in the moment data from like news articles, from all these different sources. And we're using that as context to create these really in-depth articles. For instance, yesterday when we got the announcement for Claude 3, I created a article for Claude 3. And the information on there, there's no rankings right now that are relevant for Claude 3 that has up-to-date information about it. And we just covered it today on the podcast. It was able to pull in all these sources and news sources to then use in the article. And not just that, it had an opinion from another person that was talking about Claude 3, how this, it said in quotes, it's so refreshing to see Claude 3 and look at the missteps that Anthropic had with the previous models and how they've kind of like contained it. I don't remember the exact words, but I'm paraphrasing here. But the it was able to pull in quotes like that from real people to then add to the article. And it's able to do that because we're doing what we call deep research, and we're the articles are then data rich. They have a ton of data in them to then use to make these really robust and in-depth articles. So when you talk about expertise, like what Google looks for, we're giving it to Google in spades. We have this really good data that is real time. We're pulling in all these results and we're creating a database with those results, and we're able to use that inside the article. So that is just a quick tease of what is coming. And if you're a continent scale user, you're going to be very impressed. If you're not a continent scale user, you're definitely going to want to sign up when Deep Research comes out.
And that will be out, what's our estimate, in a week?
We're thinking about it in about a week, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So second week of March is when you'll be able to log in and experience that feature. And it's not like a feature where you log in and there's a new button and there's like confetti or whatever. I mean, that eventually we can do that. But it's a feature where you log in, you generate your post, whether it's from a YouTube video, a keyword, you know, because the way Content Scale is set up, it's set up to work promptless as a one-click AI writer. So all you have to do is feed it a keyword, a YouTube video. Maybe you have a channel full of videos that you need to turn into blogs. Maybe you have a podcast, and all those episodes can be turned into blogs. So you feed it that one thing, and then it generates a human-like article. And so what Jeff's talking about is in that output, you will see the effects of deep research, and you'll see articles generated that have information that you likely can't even find yourself at the top of Google. And let me tell you, as a former content writer selling this as a service for 10 years, that's crazy. Because it took, I remember just client accounts where that was the task. It was like to write something on a new model or a new technology that you couldn't really find a lot of research on. And I would sometimes have to pause that account just to go hire a writer for 2 weeks that had either a background college degree or a background layman's experience on that actual technology, because there was nothing at the top of Google that was even useful for a quote unquote content writer. So you take that process, right, where I had to not even get started writing, find a writer for 2 weeks, and then we get started writing, and it might be another 2 weeks. That's like 4 weeks of work cut down to 5 minutes. So it's just insane to see Content Scale's core technology get better and better. And with that announcement about deep research, I'll add to that as well on the marketing side. You know, we are repositioning around RankWell, which is our trademarked SEO technology. It's proprietary. We've built it. There's a lot of tech stacks that go into it. There's some API calls. And it's so much more than just a single layer. It's really built to replace a whole stack of SEO tools. So in this RankWell reposition, you know, you'll see a different experience on the website, the same really cool design, but you'll see it positioned where the core product, the premium product is, in fact, RankWell, which is our all-in-one AI SEO writer that has that deep real-time research, machine learning, multiple LLMs to generate the most in-depth, helpful, human-like content on the planet. So that's the positioning. You know, it's really not sensible at all to even say, oh, this is a ChatGPT alternative. So I'll tell you, like, that's something you're not even going to see in our marketing, because we're light years different. If you need an email headline generated, if you need a synopsis for a whatever you're writing, yes, use ChatGPT all day long. But if you need a content piece that you would typically hire a content writer for, it's going to rank at the top of Google, delight your customers, your audience, that's Content Scale. It's literally, I think, going to be the best one out there when deep research comes out, where you really can count on it to write SEO AI content that is not garbage. So stay tuned. That is all launching this March. And we're just so excited, Jeff and I, to be working on this and to be a part of it. It's really cool. So
I've been kind of MIA lately, just like really deep working on it. I've been deep in deep research. So yeah, I'm very, very excited for us to get this out. It's going to be awesome to see it, get it in the hands of users and see their reaction and see I loved how you're talking about like hiring somebody that was specific to that knows that has the knowledge about a certain topic, because that amount of time that removes from somebody that has to be like a knowledge expert in their field.
Yeah.
What a crazy time we live in.
Yes, I know. Crazy time. There's so much to explore here. So tune in for more. This is Future Tense with your host, Julie McCoy, and drumroll.
Jeff Joyce, I do AI.
We'll catch you back here on Future Tense with Jeff Joyce, who does AI, and Julie McCoy, who talks about AI.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.